Hi everyone, and welcome to this month's podcast. I am really honored to have with me Justice Aleem Visram. Justice Aleem Visram is one of the youngest justices that we have, and I'm very proud to be in his company today. Thank you so much for making the time to be with us.
Thank you, Jared, for having me.
So, Justice, let's start. You know, I'm very tempted to call you Aleem because I know you informally, but I want to stick to the formalities. Justice Visram, tell us your journey to becoming a justice in this country.
Thank you. The journey was one full of fulfillment, full of gratitude. I began my career with international politics. I studied international development and politics at McGill University.
Okay, in Canada?
In Canada. Mm-hmm. And thereafter, I studied law, initially at Kent and thereafter at SOAS, School of Oriental
Studies. Oh, so I also went to SOAS.
Yeah, we're SOAS.
Yeah, we're SOAS alumni. Okay,
fantastic.
Cool. All right.
I just realized that.
Yeah. I didn't know that, yeah.
I studied my LPC in Nottingham. I then came back here.
So I also did the LPC at Nottingham as
Wonderful.
Well.
Wonderful. So we're both solicitors.
Correct.
And I think that's really, it's a really good foundation to do your LPC before you come back to Kenya.
Yeah.
I know that now that might be complicated because Kenya School of Law has pre-KSL requirements,
yes,
making it difficult for students to go abroad, but I think it's a good foundation. But to go back to the career, I did everything I needed to do study-wise. And then I think what really helped me along my journey was my experience in arbitration. So I taught a course in arbitration at Strathmore. I founded that course.
You founded the course?
I founded the course.
Okay.
I founded the first international commercial arbitration course
okay.
at Strathmore.
So even as you were going through your legal journey, law school journey, were you interested in dispute resolution?
Yes.
That was your focus?
So my key interest was dispute resolution, primarily arbitration.
Okay.
My LPC was, as you know, we study everything, but my focus was litigation.
Okay.
And I practiced as a litigation lawyer before at Hamilton, Harrison & Matthews, initially mm-hmm. where I did my pupillage, at Daly & Amdar, at Daly & Figgis.
Yeah.
I went off to Canada and I practiced in Canada as well. But I think between all the studies and between practice, what really helped focus me on wanting to be a judge was my father. My father was a judge for 25 years. I woke up every day watching him, listening to him. I heard him discuss his cases in the morning, discuss them in the evening, and his diligence and his commitment to the rule of law really is what made me want to do that one day. And I saw how he felt deeply fulfilled and how he actually felt like he made a difference in society. And I hope that one day I would have the opportunity to make a difference in society. So that's what I think really it all boils down to.
I mean, he must be extremely proud of you. What did he say when you were first announced as a justice?
He was deeply, deeply proud. He's still deeply proud. And we talk every day about my cases, about my work, because I think he's one of the few people who understands the joy that it gives you to be a judge, but also understand some of the frustrations that come along with it. And he's able to guide me and mentor me.
Mm-hmm.
What did he say? He gave me a hug. He said he was proud of me. And he said that it was his conviction that one day in life I would be able to do this. And it had finally come true.
I mean, it's an amazing story of generational movement in the justice system. What do you think what is his advice on a daily basis on how to manage your caseload?
Well, I follow a similar pattern to him, although I think things have changed a little between his retirement and my joining the judiciary, and he was also a court of appeal judge by the time he retired.
Yeah.
And in the high court, things are a little different. But my day typically begins with reviewing the files that I have. I go over my cause list in advance. I make sure that I have read all the submissions of the parties in terms of matters that are coming up for highlighting. I make sure that I've reviewed the substantive material in the pleadings for any hearing or trial that might take place that day. That takes approximately 2 hours in the morning, and it takes...
What time does your day start?
I'm in my office and sat at my desk by 7 a.m.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
So by 7 a.m. I'm looking through my material and I'm making sure that I know exactly where it is that I want to go in terms of the material I'm reading, or at least I have an idea of what it is that parties want to express to me
yeah. mm-hmm.
in terms of that material.
Mm-hmm.
If I have enough time, I will even start putting together drafts of rulings that are due for other days
Okay.
so that I can get a head start on those rulings.
How do you, because we talked a bit before, but how do you move from a case on insolvency to a case on a tax matter to a case on, just a corporate commercial matter within the same day?
So that takes adjustment. And I think it's one of the initial adjustments that you have to make as a judge, because you sit down and you look at your cause list and you have an insolvency matter, and then you have a tax matter, and then you have an arbitration matter, and then after that you move to intellectual property rights, and you have to be able to shift gears immediately from one area of law to the other and seamlessly, and still have a grasp of the facts in relation to the specific case that is before you. So that takes a little bit of adjustment, because we don't ordinarily have to shift so quickly from one case to another. A lawyer comes to you and he has practiced and memorized what he needs to say in relation to his specific case, but you have to be able to move from one to the other. And that takes some time initially when you join the bench.
I mean that's an incredible amount of work to be toiling through because a lot of the lawyers have done a lot of preparation. What do you think in general of the quality of the submissions that you see? I know that's going to be a controversial question.
I think when lawyers give us good submissions, it really makes our work a lot easier. And beautiful submissions make for beautiful judgments and make for beautiful rulings. The quality, I think, is still great in the commercial and tax division, where we have some of the best lawyers appearing before us every day. And there's a lot to be learned sometimes from the senior counsel and from lawyers who give us incredible work, because you can tell they have lived, breathed, and slept with their case. So it really means a lot to us when we get good submissions. It's not always the case, and I want to encourage people to do their best to give us good submissions.
What about knowledge of the law and also, relying on precedent or even keeping up with how precedents are being formed every day? How do you make sure that you're on top of it or even able to create your own precedent?
Yeah, that's a great question. The simple answer is you have to keep studying,
Reading.
keep studying. The life of a judge involves a lot of self-reflection, introspection, continuous learning. I spend a lot of my free time actually reading the Kenya Law Reports. I read what other judges are saying. I make sure I'm up to date on any Supreme Court decisions or decisions by the Court of Appeal, especially if I have a particular case that's in that area of law. Every year, I make sure I read the SOJAR, which is the State of Judiciary Annual Report, which covers the key cases that have been decided by the judiciary, and I make sure that I am cognizant and aware of the principles that went into that particular decision.
What do you think it is about being a justice in Kenya that makes your role, so pivotal to the decisions that are being taken in the judiciary?
Well, I think a judge in any country has an equally important role, and our role is to decide cases fairly, to be impartial, to be independent, and to ensure that we develop the rule of law. So I think that really is the function and role of a judge, to ensure that we can carry that out in a timely, efficient, and effective manner. And more importantly now, ensure that there is access to justice for all Kenyans, not only for the rich and powerful, but for every Kenyan that needs to have a matter resolved.
I think what I was alluding to is that we have a constitution that's fairly, modern in its timing, and therefore we can rely on that as the fundamental document for the basis on which our laws are formed, which is not the same in all African countries. How does the interplay between the constitution and the rule of law affect your ability to be an effective justice in this country?
Well, the constitution is the supreme law of Kenya, and we gave unto ourselves a wonderful constitution. The fundamental rights and freedoms that we have in our constitution, the preamble to the constitution itself outlines that we gave this constitution to ourselves. It talks about national values, it talks about public participation. So we have a great constitution, I think. It even outlines that the rule of law is one of the national values in the Constitution. What's the interplay? I think every time we construe, or every time we seek to analyze or understand any law, we have to do it in a way that protects, promotes the constitutional values and principles. So we have to have a wide understanding of how we interpret the law, and we have to interpret the law in a manner that always protects and promotes the rule of law and the fundamental freedoms. I think that's the interplay between the two.
And I think being in a commercial context, because it's not a human rights issue, it's not a, sort of family issue, it's a commercial context. How do you make sure that your interpretation is heard in the judgments that you give?
So as you say, commercial cases don't always have a constitutional dimension to it, and by and large they won't. It's actually called the doctrine of constitutional avoidance. So where there is civil law appropriate and applicable to a case, we don't bring in the Constitution. But the way you make sure that your voice is heard is, I think, by writing clearly, by ensuring that you are well reasoned in your argument, and ensuring that you have decided your case independently and impartially and fairly. I think judges speak through their writing, and it's our role to ensure that our writing actually resolves and concludes the issue between the parties to the best of, to the best of our ability.
What is the worst possible outcome for you in a decision that you make? Is it the challenge? Is it that the decision being challenged?
No, not at all. We have no problem with our decisions being challenged, and the reason is because challenging a decision clarifies the law.
For everyone.
It clarifies the law for everyone. It allows the parties access to justice. It allows them an opportunity to pursue the appellate chain, which is there for the reason that judges make mistakes sometimes, that perhaps the law evolves, and that parties and people are entitled to keep pursuing their claim to the extent permissible under law. So being challenged is not an issue. I think the worst possible outcome would be a loss of faith in the decision. And the reason I say that is because one of the greatest challenges that we face today is public perception and trust. So the worst possible outcome is that people don't trust the decision and they are unhappy with it because of a lack of trust in the judicial system. That would be the worst possible outcome for us as a judiciary.
That's true. What is the best possible outcome for you?
The best possible outcome, and I've actually had this happen to me before, and it was a wonderful feeling, is when a party that loses before you goes ahead and compliments you because they understood the reasons that you had set out in your decision and that they were happy with your work despite the fact that they lost. It's a wonderful feeling for a lawyer to say that I appeared before this judge today and I was really happy even though I lost.
Even though I lost, I mean, that's great. I want to go back to you start your day starts at 7 a.m. How does
Yes.
it progress and what time does it end?
So
Tell us
7
everything
a.m.
so that we can just be
Sure,
clear.
sure. So if you want to be a judge, be prepared to work for
Exactly.
long hours and be prepared to also enjoy your work for long hours. And I think that's what makes it sustainable, is that you have to find it fulfilling. But I start preparation at 7 a.m. Proceedings start at 9.
Okay.
So from 7 to 9, it's preparation for the proceedings. Proceedings then go from 9 to around 1 o'clock. some judges break for tea, some don't. It's just a matter of stamina. And
Just remind me, is it all online now?
it is completely virtual. So the Commercial and Tax Division, which is where I sit, is completely virtual. All our proceedings are online unless you want parties to come and appear in person,
Do you think that's a
which some
good thing?
judges
Because I
do.
know that obviously that changed during COVID. What is your opinion of that?
So I think digitization has incredible capacity to create access to justice because parties can appear from wherever they
Quicker.
are. It is speedy, it is efficient for the lawyers. They don't have to fight traffic, they can work from home, they can have their material laid out on the desk in front of them. Witnesses can appear from wherever they are. But there is a downside. And the downside is that internet penetration in Kenya is roughly about 48%. 70% of people still live in rural areas, which means that they may not have access to justice. They may not be able to access the digital platform. So we have to be careful that we don't marginalize people who don't yet have the capacity to actually appear before us virtually. And that's a balance, I think.
Okay, fair question. Continue. So 1 o'clock.
Proceedings will then go on till about one. Thereafter, it's really up to the individual judge. Some people choose to have hearings and sitting in the afternoon, others prefer to write. And I think every judge has their own schedule. But at some point in the day, We have to write the rulings, we have to write the judgments, and more work goes into writing than sitting and hearing. So you use your afternoons as a balance then to either sit or write, whichever you prefer.
Is it all done by yourself? Do you look at the case, review everything by yourself, or are you supported by clerks and etc.? How does that interplay?
So in the High Court, typically it's a one-man show or one-woman show. You will have a researcher that perhaps is you share and serve several people, or perhaps is exclusive for your own use, but by and large, we share researchers. Other than a researcher who will help you research legal principles, your decision belongs to you, you're accountable for it, and you write it from beginning to end.
That's a heavy responsibility. What is the balance between cases that are very high end, very complex commercial issues, and then those ones which are just a dispute between shareholders or something like that?
Well, the jurisdiction of the High Court starts at 20 million. So every case in the High Court will be 20 million shillings and above. So the stakes are higher in terms of pecuniary value. In terms of complexity, we have an increasing number of complex litigation issues because we have more cross-border disputes. We have more litigation arising out of arbitration matters. We have a lot of dispute resolution arising out of insolvency matters, and now specifically, in relation to tax matters. So those are fairly complex matters. The run-of-the-mill sort of simple litigation, and I would call it simple litigation because the principles of law are fairly consistent and simple, are injunctions. So we have a lot of cases in the commercial and tax division where parties are coming to court to stop a bank from exercising their statutory powers of sale. Those are very clear-cut cases based on clear-cut law. So it's not what I would call complex, but there's a fair balance between our work, noting that we also handle work relating to intellectual property rights. Now there is increasingly going to be disputes relating to AI, digitization, and digital services being provided in Kenya. It will all become part of the caseload that we have.
And I guess it reflects the state of the economy if you're seeing that there's more insolvency matters versus,
Yes,
corporate
yes.
matters, corporate commercial matters. The other thing I wanted to ask is, what is the period between the initial hearing and the decision typically in Kenya? Because we do tend to think, or at least as lawyers, that it does take a very long time for the resolution of matters to the final determination.
We aim for 3 years. It's not always the case.
But that is long, isn't it?
It's not actually
It's not.
3 years is not very. I mean, 3 years between the timing of between the time of filing and resolution. So from the time you file your dispute in court, meaning that you file your plaint and you serve it, to getting judgment, we aim for 3 years. It can be much longer. And the reason is because parties have to also pursue and prosecute their case. And you have interlocutory applications that take place between the beginning and end. Interlocutory applications are decisions that need to be made during the course of the litigation prior to the actual judgment. Sometimes there are so many applications in between that by the time the parties actually attend the trial in relation to the substantive issues, 2, 3 years could have
Could have
passed.
passed, yeah. I mean, do you really think that's access to justice? Just
Well,
from.
I think access to justice is a step-by-step process in relation to every issue that the parties need resolution of, and that includes the applications, because applications are equally important to the parties. The application could be for security for costs, and I think the application could be for many other issues that are important for the parties. So as long as from the point they file that application, they have an opportunity to be heard in court, that is access to justice.
How do you celebrate significant milestones? What do you do to, when you've written a judgment, you think this is great? Do you publish in international journals? Do you participate in international dialogue on issues? How do you make sure that whatever impact you're having in Kenya is resonant?
I would say I celebrate quietly.
Aleem, everything with
Each
you is quiet.
I think each decision that I'm happy with after publication, not before, I will read to my wife, who will very reluctantly listen. Thereafter, I will read it to
Luckily,
my
she's a
dad.
lawyer.
Luckily, she's a lawyer. I will then read it to my dad, who will very willingly listen. I think I might share the ratio with a few other judges at our meeting or our training or perhaps at a colloquium. But really, no, we don't celebrate in a large way. We celebrate by knowing that the consistency develops the rule of law, and we hope that eventually we'll be able to develop the rule of law, and eventually, through consistency, there'll be greater trust in the system.
Do you lean on other judges as well, and sounding as a sounding board for making your decisions, or if you think that there's something that needs to change?
We don't typically. And the reason we don't is because any extraneous influence or commentary that was not brought to your attention by the
By the parties.
parties would be considered to be a form of interference or perhaps issues that were not brought to your attention by the parties and maybe an unfair influence on your decision making. But we do bounce ideas off each other generally in relation to areas of law. And you may have an opportunity to have a conversation with your colleagues and say, what do you think about this particular area of law? And get advice and guidance from them as to how you might want to understand the law, but not in relation to a particular case.
I mean, you seem very even keeled, Alim, Justice Alim. Do you ever get frustrated? Do you ever d demonstrate frustration? Are you able to?
I do get frustrated. I would like to, deal with my frustrations as in the best way possible. So I try to exercise restraint in court. I try to be patient. I try to be courteous. But yes, I get frustrated, and usually I express my frustration when the court session is over.
So no viral moments for Justice Aline.
I swim faster. I stretch further if I'm doing yoga.
Oh, you do yoga as well.
I do yoga
Oh,
as well.
cool. Okay. All right.
But I try to exercise restraint in the courtroom.
Okay. So far, and looking back in your career, and you've done so many things in a very short space of time. What do you think has been your biggest achievement so far? And where do you think you want to go? Short of the Chief Justice.
My biggest achievement, from a judicial point of view, I don't think I would like to point out a particular case or a particular issue as a biggest achievement, but I think my greatest fulfillment so far is being able to handle cases quickly and efficiently. And I say that with good reason. And it's because I believe that by the time parties appear before me, they should have a ruling immediately. And so something that I do is I try to give parties a ruling sometimes even at the point of highlighting of submissions, which means when they come to me and they're highlighting their submissions, at that point I ensure that I've read their case entirely, that I've read their submissions entirely. So the point of highlighting becomes an opportunity for me to clarify whatever doubts I might have. And if I'm able to, I give them a ruling then and there in relation to applications. I make sure that no ruling ever goes beyond 30 days from the date the parties highlight. I make sure no judgment ever goes beyond 60 days. And I've managed to do that consistently for 3 years now.
I mean, that's amazing, Aline, because that actually progresses matters, for real, in real time for people who are, at the point where they can't really get along in a commercially, right?
And that's why that achievement means a lot to me. I feel that everybody comes to the courtroom with a certain amount of trauma. And if I can resolve that quickly, they can move on with their lives.
How do you make sure that that is applied through, throughout, you didn't respond on the CJ question, but I'll come back to that. How do you make sure that that's applied throughout? Is it a standard setting thing, or how do we make sure that everyone who comes to the court system in Kenya gets the same level of attention?
So our statutory provisions provide that we have to actually deliver a ruling within 30 days and a judgment in 60 days. It's not always possible. So there is a statutory basis for equality and a statutory basis to ensure that everyone is treated equally in terms of delivery and access to justice. But yes, it's not always possible because we have caseloads that sometimes are huge. In the commercial division, for example, each judge handles between 500 to 600 cases,
Wow.
and that's a huge docket. Sometimes the cases are more complicated, and you need more time to deliberate, and you need more time to reason and carefully consider.
Yeah.
So it's not always possible, but we do our best to stick to the statutory timelines. As I said, for the last 3 years, I've never gone beyond
Yeah.
the statutory period, and often I'm able to do so well before
So do
the
we
timeline.
need more justices? Do we need more people
We do.
coming
We
into
do.
the court system?
We need a lot more judges. We need more help in terms
Yeah.
of researchers. We need more resources. The Chief Justice has done an incredible thing. She has hired 40 High Court judges since becoming the CJ. She has just advertised another 20 vacancies, and the interviews will be coming up sometime in August this year, I presume, or September. I understand there are plans to hire even more judges. So, and of course, there's also been a vacancy for 100 magistrates or so.
Okay.
So we do have an ongoing recruitment, and I think we will have more resources for the public. But what we also need is a greater budget. Our financial budget is far too low. We need about 54 billion, and we've been allocated about 27 billion. If the numbers are, I may be plus or minus a billion, 27, 28, but we need 52 to 54 billion to operate at full capacity. We're running at less than half of what we need.
Okay, under-resourced. The other question I was going to ask is on cases that you handle, sometimes it is a case that the judge is changed in the middle, or it's the case is handed over to someone else, which then means for the parties they have to start again. How can we avoid that, and why does that occur? Because that
So
can cause a lot of frustration.
that's a huge problem. And I think it's one that lawyers have grappled with since time immemorial. It's one that the judges also grapple with. There isn't an easy fix to that. The issue is that we have a transfer system. The transfer system is important to ensure that judges become well-rounded, to ensure that they serve in different divisions, and to also prevent judges becoming entrenched in a particular station. It provides greater transparency, greater accountability, and it ensures that the parties also have an opportunity to be heard by a fresh set of ears and fresh set of eyes over a period of time. So it's good for the system. But yes, what happens is that a judge is moved, and when they are moved, there is a file that is left behind that somebody has to take over. Often those proceedings have to be typed because many of our judges in the past handwrote. So, by the time those proceedings are typed, by the time the file comes to the new judge, by the time he has looked at the case and is able to bring himself up to speed, a lot of time may have been lost. It is a perennial issue. How do we deal with it? The simple answer is at this point, I don't know, because we must continue with the transfers. But the way I deal with it is I do my best to read the file as quickly as possible, bring myself up to speed, have the proceedings typed immediately from the outset, once I know proceedings need to be typed, and then resolve part heard matters first in priority, dealing with the older matters first, so that anything that's pending gets dealt with first. And you don't do that until you hear fresh, I mean, you don't hear fresh matters until
Until
you've
you had
dealt
the backlog
with the old
first.
matters. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess what we would like to see is really the diligent application. And I'm sure, I can't speak for everyone, but I'm sure that we'd like to see that level of attention on all matters by all judges, in this country. Speaking of that, looking to the future and looking at where the country is at the moment, what are the biggest threats to making sure that the judiciary remains independent, that the judges are giving sound and well understood deliberation d decisions? What are the threats to that at the moment?
Well, I think the greatest threat that we face today as a judiciary is public trust. We have to ensure that the public has trust in our decisions. The rule of law is vulnerable, and in order to preserve it, we have to ensure that people believe in the decisions that the court arrives
Yeah.
at. And I think we have to ensure the judges are independent, that they are. I think accountable for their decision making. And I think one of the other important aspects is that the rules, sorry, not the rules, that the decisions, the orders are actually obeyed by the public. We have a perennial issue where orders are not obeyed. And I think when that happens, the public has the perception that they don't need to obey orders. And if orders are not obeyed, we descend into a situation where there's chaos, because our legal structure and the economy all depend on confidence, and confidence will only take root if orders are obeyed.
We spoke a bit about the virtual courts. And obviously, with the AI coming into the fore, in every realm of life, how does AI, or have you guys thought in within the court system of how AI will affect the ability for parties to have fair hearings, or even for the determinations to be, made by a human being, or how AI may intervene in the judicial system?
Yeah, so AI is being used proactively by judges. We carry out our hearings online now, at least in my division. And we have AI actually create a transcript of all the proceedings. So our proceedings take place on Teams, and we have an AI app that actually then transcribes the entire proceedings, which makes it incredible for us because we can access that immediately. The other area that AI is being used in is, I think, research. People are utilizing AI for research. I think there's a certain amount of caution that has to be exercised in using AI. You have to cross-check that the authorities actually exist, that AI hasn't dreamt up the cases that you were using in support of your arguments. We've had several situations where counsel filed beautiful pleadings. They haven't read the pleadings, they haven't read the submissions because they're AI generated. The cases cited are what they call hallucinations in AI language. AI hallucinated a case that spoke in support of the argument it was putting forward. So we have to be careful with AI. At the same time, it's a great tool if we harness it for the right purpose, but we can't rely on it. More importantly, I think when we think about AI, we have to realize that AI has inherent biases that are built in. We may not recognize what those biases are, but they are there. AI also doesn't take into account ethical considerations. And finally, AI should not override or take over discretion. As human beings, we have to, I think, especially as judges, we have a certain amount of discretion which we exercise, and that has to be exercised judiciously, but it also has to take into account compassion. So I think if we rely too much on AI, we take away discretion, we take away compassion, which I think are important elements of judicial making.
Yeah, I mean, those are excellent points. And I hope, well understood, and all people will begin to understand, especially the concepts that you talked about, hallucinations, the inherent bias that AI has, which we will only affect us more if we're not, very diligent on review. So thank you for that.
Sure.
In terms of legal reform, I need to push you to give me real answers on what legal reform we can expect, or we should expect, in Kenya in order to make our judicial system much more effective than it is now.
You know, I don't think we need judicial reform. I think we need implementation. We have an incredible constitution, one of the best in the world. If you look at our constitution, we have provisions on every area imaginable. If you look at, for example, anti-corruption laws, we have sufficient laws to cover all the issues that we face as a society. We also have an Article 2 of our constitution, a provision that says international laws ratified in Kenya form part of our national laws. So we have enough law. What we lack is implementation, and what we lack is adherence to the law. So we don't need reform as such. There are areas that may require reform, and I think those are being brought to the attention of Kenya law reform, especially in areas such as these sexual offenses, and the age factor. When it comes to sexual offenses, those are all areas where maybe reform needs to be considered. But by and large, we have great law. We just need better implementation, more adherence to the law.
Okay. The state of the country at the moment, very fragile. You've seen everything that's going on, the riots, the rest. Can I push you on what it is that the judiciary is thinking about all of what is happening now?
I have to first say that I can't state what the judiciary is thinking on behalf of the judiciary because that is the prerogative of the Chief Justice, and only she speaks on behalf of the judiciary. But I will say that I think the judiciary are doing their part to ensure that any action that is taken by the government conforms with the law and the Constitution. And in situations where actions have been taken that traverse the Constitution, the judicial review divisions and the appropriate divisions of the High Court are dealing with those cases to the best of their ability and as expeditiously as possible. If you look at the amount of work that's happening in the judiciary right now during the course of these protests, you will see that judges are trying to uphold the law at every step possible and ensure that the rights of people are protected. So our thinking, I would say, is to uphold the rule of law and ensure that power is restrained in accordance with the constitutional mandate of each of those actors that is taking action during these protests.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have expected a different answer, but I think it is true. Let's talk about your future. What are you looking forward to? I'm going to push you again on the CJ, but we can ignore that for now if you want. What do you look forward to? What is your term, first of all? Is there a term, or how do you progress within the judiciary? Maybe you can explain that a bit.
We do have a term limit. The Constitution provides that every judge will retire upon reaching the age of retirement, which is 70. So at 70, we down our tools and hopefully we sail off into the sunset.
Yeah, but you've got like 60 years left before that
I,
happens. But
well,
what I mean is, do you
27.
how do, is it? Oh gosh,
27 years left, yeah.
how do you progress? Do you go to the Court of Appeal? Do you go to the Supreme Court? How does it move
There
forward?
is
What is a career trajectory?
no automatic progression. You apply, and so the starting point would be that in the event you want to move to a higher court or an appellate court, you would wait for a vacancy. Once the vacancy has been published, you would then apply. And the courts above the High Court are the Court of Appeal and the Supreme Court. And then, of course, the president of the Supreme Court is the Chief Justice. So I think every judge would want to progress to the greatest extent possible. And for every judge, that would depend on where they see themselves and where they'd like to be. Yes, of course. I would like to be in a position where I have the greatest ability to develop the law and to make the greatest impact on society. And I think at this stage of my life, that means doing the best possible where I am, making good judgments, making reasoned judgments, and making sure I do so effectively, efficiently, and fairly. We have great Chief Justice, and I think she inspires many of us. There is hope for the judiciary, and I think hope for every one of us to do the best we can at every step of that process, wherever it might be, High Court, Court of Appeal, or Supreme Court.
Well, we wish you all the best, Aleem, and I can't wait to see where you go from here, Justice Aleem. I forgot again.
Thank you.
I want to talk a bit about the Africa Tree Free Trade Agreement and its impact on the judiciary. Have you started considering what the impact will be on decisions in Kenya when they are really cross-border, or they're made at the Africa Free Trade level?
So the litigation will get more complex. It's already becoming more complex. We have many cross-border disputes arising in our courts, not just from within Africa, but also from across the world. I think judges will have to read more broadly. We'll have to understand that contracts sometimes refer, and this happens a lot in arbitration, contracts will sometimes refer to foreign law in terms of how you interpret the contract because they'll be based on foreign laws. They will then specify that in the event of a dispute, the courts of Kenya will hear it. So you will have a cross-section and interaction of laws between Kenyan law, where that particular contract is being disputed and now arrives in your court, and then the contract itself may be construed in accordance with a completely different law. So I think judges may have to understand that there might be situations where you have to understand jurisprudence arising out of different countries, understand the laws of different countries, and also understand how that intersection plays a part in your decision making here. We, I think, also have to just prepare ourselves for the fact that everything will be more complex. We live in a globalized economy now. We live in a system where Kenyan multinationals, or rather multinationals in Kenya, are doing big business here. There is a whole array of new law opening up, and we have to familiarize ourselves with it. How do we do that? We do it through greater training. We get exposure by interacting with the Law Society of Kenya, other professionals. And I think while that's all important, we have to also remind ourselves that ultimately the job remains the same, which is to actually make sure that our decisions are fair and impartial and that we uphold the rule of law.
Yeah. What is the highlight of your day on any given day?
The highlight of my day? Wow.
And not the swimming.
the highlight of my day, mm-hmm. Gosh, I think it would be lunch.
What do you like eating?
What I like eating and what I eat are two entirely
different things.
Yeah. I like eating barbecue. I like eating nergis, you know,
hashmi.
Chicken tikka, hashmi.
Shout out all of those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I like eating. Mm. What I actually eat on a day-to-day basis is drastically different. Unfortunately, my lunch tends to consist of a soup and salad and
all the healthy things.
And some kind of steamed fish or grilled chicken.
Oh, gosh.
But I do cheat on the weekends, and I enjoy my food.
Yeah. I want us to give advice for young lawyers or young people thinking about coming into the judiciary. So let's start with what would your advice be to a young lawyer who is looking at the judiciary as an option in terms of your own career path or even things you would do differently?
I would say that please apply. Please take that thought and make it a serious objective in your life.
But do you apply from the point of law school? How do you enter? Do you think it's better to have some kind of training or at least be, you know, an associate in a litigation or, you know, commercial practice before you start thinking about the judiciary? So have some experience.
Yes. So there are requirements that you have to have met before you're eligible. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have to have practiced in the High Court. You have to have practiced for at least 10 years
before you can even
eligible.
Apply.
Yeah, okay, before fine. You're eligible to apply. Mm-hmm. So in your 10-year period, if that is something you want to do ultimately, I would say prepare for it. Read widely, ensure that you do some public service, do some volunteer work with your community, try and spend a little bit of time doing some academic work as well, write if you can, speak if you can at public functions. Find a way to create an opportunity to carve out a niche for yourself, either in terms of your ability to write or your ability to speak, and make sure that you find ways to give time to your community. All of those become very important when you go into public service.
Okay.
That would be my advice, but also I would say consider it seriously. A lot of people think that they could never be a judge, that they could never hold this position. There's no reason why you can't, and I would say to a young person, the sky is the limit. Believe in yourself. If you want to do this, there are plenty of young judges in the system. I'm not the only judge in my early 40s, and I hope there'll be many more.
Okay.
So I encourage you, go ahead and do it.
What about work-life balance within the judiciary? Do you think it's, being a commercial lawyer, obviously there is no work-life balance, and I can't tell people that there is. How do you achieve that within the judiciary? Maybe that's something that's more attractive to younger lawyers now.
You have to create your own work-life balance. You carve out time for yourself. You have to find a way to manage your stress and to manage your caseload. The reality is that handling 500 or 600 files per judge, there cannot be a work-life balance until you find a way to create it for yourself. How do you do that? Make sure you give yourself an hour or two to exercise, whether it's walking, whether it's swimming, whether it's running. Make sure that you're active on the weekends. Find a way to put your work aside and do something that's important for you. At the end of the day, our careers are important, but so is family, so is friendship. So I make sure that I spend time with my family, and I make sure that I spend time with my friends. Yes, initially it's an adjustment, but I think it's ultimately the only way to have a sustainable career.
Yeah. One of the things that I think has come across throughout this podcast is that you actually really care about the work that you do and care about the decisions that you make. In a high-stress situation, when there's a lot at stake, how do you center yourself? How do you go back to yourself?
I meditate.
Oh, you do.
I do. I meditate regularly every day. I do. I journal from time to
Wow,
time,
okay.
and of course, I mentioned the swimming. But I take time to do activities that will calm my mind to center myself. And I think in contentious situations, usually the only contention that you will ever face as a judge is when you're sitting on a bench, and that means that you may have other judges who disagree with you in terms of their approach to the case. I think the important thing is to welcome differences of opinion, to have robust conversation, and to understand that perspective allows for an improvement in your understanding. A dissent gives you the ability to actually reframe and perhaps even reorganize your thoughts and perhaps even improve your own understanding of a case. So I would say welcome dissent, welcome contention, but deal with it in a courteous, polite, and always respectable manner.
In terms of working well, you know, the routines, perhaps there's a way of working that you've adopted that you found to be very effective. Can you give us a clue about that?
In terms of working well,
Like something that you do as a routine. So for example, I do like a to-do list every day. And I'll not fail to do that because then it reminds me of things that are not that I may have forgotten. It might be repetitive, but it works for me. What about
yep,
you?
to-do lists are great. I have my own version of a to-do list, which is the day before I look at the files that I have to deal with the next day. I then make a note of which will proceed, which won't proceed, which ones I need to look at in greater detail. And then the next morning I look at them again. And having already looked at them the day before, I know where to focus more attention. So that allows me to be very clear in terms of what I need to do that morning by the time the parties appear before me. That's for the files. I think I have two to-do lists as well, just like you. I make a list and make sure I get through it and check it off.
Excellent. We're now at the quick fire round. Okay. I don't know if you read the questions beforehand. You're not supposed to, but I'm sure you did, given the fact that you're so
I
well
glanced. I
prepared.
may
You
have
glance. Okay.
glanced.
So, beach or city holiday?
Beach.
Where?
What time?
The favorite place to visit in on Earth or just for beach
Well,
holidays?
I love Watamu. Watamu is probably my favorite. I would love to go to Greece. I haven't been there yet. I would love to go to Santorini. It's on my bucket list, and hopefully they'll rebuild. I know they had to evacuate it because of the volcanic eruptions, but that's a bucket list. That's a bucket list place to go to.
And you will apple or orange?
Apple.
Pizza topping of choice.
Green chilies.
Green chilies.
Green chilies. Gotta
Gosh.
have whatever's on the pizza, you gotta have green
Green
chilies.
chilies.
And probably mincemeat. If I could have a, like a bolognese pizza with
Oh,
mincemeat.
nice. Okay.
Mincemeat, lots of green chilies, a little
Do
bit of
you
onion.
cook?
I make a very good chicken curry.
Oh, really good.
Yeah. Karoga.
Kuroga style,
Yeah, Karoga style.
Favorite drink?
Favorite drink. Wow. Coffee.
Okay. Yeah, you did say that at the beginning,
Coffee,
actually.
yeah. Followed closely by, a red wine.
What type of red wine?
Amarone, the Valpolicella, or something like that. I like a rich, bold red wine. I also like South African wine.
Right, let's remember that. Thank you so much, Justice Salim. I think you've given us food for thought. You've given us very deliberate answers. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you very much for having me.
And
It
you've
was a
been a
pleasure to
great
be here.
guest. Great guest. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Everyone, see you next month.